6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually, as always, by Anna Forsythe at A4Sy03. As we mentioned last episode, still hurting us in cap recapture, Mattly at Mattly underscore 61, because he retired midway through his contract, and remaining unfit to podcast, not sure if he's on the LTIR or locked somewhere else trying to escape, is Adam Ovenel-Carter at Adam FOC. But Anna and I, as you've seen, decided we need to get people that are awesome on our show. And as a result, we've got friend of the show, Jordan Bateman, back on after a long hiatus. He is now, since his last visit, the VP comms for the ICBA, professional rink builder, and all sorts of other cool things. I wrote the two down. I'm sorry. I was trying to.
That's right. Long-suffering Canucks fan, as you all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely identify with that one.
Yes, seriously kicking tires on the Kraken. Thank you for having me. It's awesome to be back. And I think the last time I was on the show, we were in the depths of despair over over tanking for lottery draft picks, and now we are again just slightly above the depths of despair. Kind of pondering tanking for lottery draft picks, so nothing much changes in Canada.
Right.
Yeah,
please, a change. Right.
Yeah. When times are dark, we bring Jordan in to help brighten our moods. Although, not going to lie, considering what the rundown has, brightening moods might not be the focus of this episode.
Hey, the Canucks won on Saturday.
Right.
They won a single game.
They wore their work boots and they.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that too. They went full blue collar. In fact, most of those collars were unbuttoned. Canucks win one, lose one. We'll talk about what we saw from their efforts against Calgary. There was a thank you video we'll probably touch on. Francesco Aquilini decided to get on Twitter and say a few words. If you happen to follow along to Sports Talk Radio here in Vancouver, you probably already know the news. If you happen to listen to last week's episode, you heard me unscripted, uncut, kind of emotional, a little raw because I recorded it like, I want to say 20 minutes after that cold open. So we'll talk with Jordan and Anna here to get their thoughts on the matter. And I've calmed down a little bit, but maybe I haven't brought my faculties together. And then what else is going on in the league? A whole lot of fun times. So you know what? Let's waste no further time. Let's jump into Rewind. The Vancouver Canucks lost one on Thursday, they won one on Saturday, and if there's one thing that's clear, so long as they get 50 shots or more in a game, they might win.
Easy.
Yeah, no, what's the problem? Yeah, that's a perfect recipe.
That's for totally sustainable.
Totally. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. No worries at all. And if Tyler Myers gets the last one, that's the other thing that happens. That's happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So on that note, there was a conversation going on in C4 Discord after Saturday's game. Should Tyler Myers be converted into a forward? And there weren't too many people arguing with that.
I've honestly heard that before. Everyone's saying, like, he's too clumsy to be a defenseman and that, like, he actually might be an asset up front. I don't know if that's true, but I don't know if he's adding that much to the defense.
Picture Tyler Myers as a forward going in on a forecheck. How's that going to look?
Yeah. Well,
but would it be any worse
Tyler
than
Myers skating backwards, like, because he's pinched, like, at the wrong time? Doesn't look great either.
He doesn't usually hustle back, though. So it's not, he usually just kind of, you know, wanders back, meanders back to help out.
Well, you always hear good things about forwards that can skate backwards. So, I mean, he's already got that going for him. Throw him on the third line or fourth line, big body on the special teams in front of the net. Fewer defensive liability issues, even though that would leave a big hole, literally and proverbially, in the Canucks' blue line. Mm-hmm. Just saying, it might be worth an experiment.
Well, since, yeah, we have no choice but to keep him on the team. So,
yeah, well, Myers makes what, $5 million a year? So it'd be one of our lower paid for fourth line forwards.
Yeah.
More money in the press box. You're right. So,
yeah, I guess budget wise, he's a fourth liner, according to this topsy turvy. I have such a love hate with Myers. Myers and Sutter are the two players for me who I just, you know, it seems like just when I'm ready to write them off, they'll make the play. And you're like,
yeah, totally.
What is going on here? Like, how is this? Who are you? And then, you know, it buys you a little bit of grace for another week. And then, you know, the play falls off. And you're like, no, this is it. This is it. And then they score the game winner or something. Some crazy nonsense like that.
Yeah. Brandon Sutter is particularly good at that. His sense of timing is just very good somehow. But yeah, like, I've gotten to a point with Brandon Sutter where even though it's bad for someone of his caliber and his price to be unnoticeable most of the time, but I've gone to the point where I'm just like, oh, most of the time that's all right. If he's not doing really dumb stuff to make me notice him, that's kind of fine with me. But that's sad that we're at that place.
Okay, well, Sutter's one of the guys that body breaks down after a while, and they just run out of, like, he seems to run out of gas and run out of health, and it's like a video game guy, and you can see his little health meter sort of trailing off towards the end of the season. And you're right, then you're lucky if he's just disappeared, let alone, you know, actually not a liability.
Well, I genuinely wonder, and we've talked about this on previous shows, would we be as upset with Brandon Sutter if he was actually paid JAG money with the production and his style of play? I don't think so. I think we would actually be like, oh, this is great value. Our problem has everything to do with what he is being paid for and how he was expected to be the, as Jim put it, the player you build a roster around, a foundational piece, the anchor of a good team. He's an anchor for sure.
Yeah.
Dragging this team down.
I also think, I mean, he's fairly old for a player like that. Was he early 30s? But like, he feels like a player from even longer ago. Like, he's just not kept up with the changes in the game, and you just feel like he's left behind a little bit and a bit of a stick in the mud player. But as you say, if he was paid JAG money, yeah, we wouldn't be mad at it. But I also don't think he'd be here if he was paid JAG money.
Well, no, some other team would have paid him more than JAG.
Yeah, your theory is if we paid him like we paid Tyler Mott, we'd have hot girl Sutter. Is that, would that be the analog there?
Hey, you know, he's a good looking guy. Like, Brandon Sutter's a bit of a babe. Terrible taste in music, but he's a good looking dude. But
I'm a little tongue tied about the hot girl Sutter. Like, I mean, there's Mott Girl Summer, but now we have Hot Girl Sutter. And I mean,
I know. Get the t shirts made. We're on our way. There you go.
Yeah.
Trademark that before they do.
Yeah. Okay, does anyone, like, do TikTok? Because I'm just imagining this TikTok video of, like, you know, can't talk right now doing hot girl stuff and just, like, a compilation of all Brandon Sutter's mistakes over the years.
I'm on TikTok, but I can assure you, at the Light Force won't be doing anything of the sort.
My teenage daughters have forbidden me from being on TikTok because they just feel like it's an old guy trying to recapture his long lost youth, and they're probably not wrong. So,
yeah, it's probably for the best. But like, I'm not on TikTok, but I get TikTok videos all the time. They just pop up on Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. So you can always sort of capture the vibe.
I'm just waiting for Clay to fire up his TikTok channel to do a sea shanty parody of the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh yeah,
you know,
we're days away. Days away.
I mean, if Wellwood still played for the Canucks, the Wellwood man come, or whatever it would be instead of Wellerman.
Oh. I'll be Chris freestyle a sea shanty about Kyle Wellwood right now.
No, thank you. But you know, back on the Vancouver Canucks, that first game against on Thursday against Markstrom, where he essentially stone the Vancouver Canucks, but arguably, even though they were generating offense, like, they were out shooting at one point, it was like 20-9 after two. And then Calgary turned it up in the third period and ultimately got the goals they needed. It felt to me in that game, and then I kind of had that same feeling on Saturday, where it didn't matter how many pucks the Vancouver Canucks were going to fire at that net. At no point did I feel confident they were going to actually get one by, or if they did, no confidence that they were going to be able to prevent the Flames from coming back down the ice and equalizing. And on Saturday, when the Vancouver Canucks were holding on to this lead, the whole thought process they had, they're going to make a mistake. It's going to be a brutal mistake. It's going to be like a 3-0 and Demko's going to get, you know, hung out to dry. Didn't happen. And I'm still trying to, you know, rationalize how it didn't happen.
Yeah, there was that moment where you thought to yourself, okay, so Markey's going to make the unbelievable save at one end, and just like we've seen all season long, it'll be converted into an odd man rush the other way, and Demko, you know, will whiff on a puck and or be hung out to dry. Not to blame Demko. And it was going to go in. And you're right, it didn't happen. I have no explanation as to what made Thursday different from Saturday, other than they broke the code by not wearing the work boots, or by wearing work boots, I guess. That seems to be the only thing they changed, unless Louis Erickson is such a stabilizing force. Sorry.
Sorry, I shouldn't have just laughed out loud at that. But yeah, that's the thing. It's weird because Thursday and Saturday weren't that different, both in a good and bad way. You felt like they were actually putting the attacking effort in both times, but both times you just felt like they're completely defensively fragile and it could go wrong at any minute. So, yeah.
Even though the Saturday matchup was distinctly tilted in Vancouver's favor, it wasn't that they were just getting shots on it. They were generating opportunities. And yeah, maybe that has everything to do with casual Saturday as they showed up into the rink wearing street clothes. But even with that confidence, me as a fan, maybe jaded, maybe because I've been beat down as a Canucks fan for as long as I am, had no confidence. Mm-hmm. So we should concede. We're recording right now, Monday night. The game has probably just started. Hopefully it's not 3-0 Calgary at this point. I do not know. But if the Vancouver Canucks were to string that again tonight where they get up, like, close to 50 shots on net and generate opportunities, get another win, is that a sign that, okay, things have turned around? Like, how much is this series like Ottawa, or how much is it different? Because we have to consider the Vancouver Canucks are still within reach of being in contention, as they'll probably be through to April with the way the divisional setup is.
I mean, I do think that there is a difference between like Toronto and Montreal and the rest of the league. Like, I think there's those two teams and a gap. And then I do think, but Senators do seem to be able to put it together against other teams a little bit. But I do think, again, there's a gap at the bottom and there's Ottawa Senators. So out of the teams in the middle, I think there's always going to be a way of like Canucks taking wins off like Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. But I think we'll, more times than not, we'll end up at the issue of defensive issues. Like, that will just keep coming back to that, whether we steal wins or not. Like, that's always going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what's happening in the Canucks game tonight, but Toronto blew a 5-1 lead against Ottawa tonight. Ottawa won 6-5. So, pretty, you know, like, I'm not sure if Ottawa is just Toronto's kryptonite and, you know, one of those teams in those rivalries that just, they show up to play Toronto and everyone else can take points off of them. Edmonton has no goaltender and, you know, their defense might be the one defense in the division that's worse than the Canucks, other than Ottawa. So, you know, you do feel like you can get through there. Like the last Toronto game, I thought, was a good Canuck effort. They had the terrible minute and fell apart. And you know, like, Toronto is obviously a more talented, deeper team with, you know, real Stanley Cup aspirations this year. I don't think the Canucks are in that boat. So, you know, was Toronto playing with their dinner a little bit before they ate them, maybe? But, you know, it was still a decent performance for the Canucks. And then you had the decent one, and Markey just stole it from them in the first game. Like I think for us, too, it's partly we'd seen the Markey movie so many times work for us. So you know, you do have this, you know, unbelievable dread every time you play Calgary that Markey's going to stone. Plus the Toffoli factor, like Canucks coming back to haunt us. This is why we need to trade Jake Virtanen far outside of the division, as far away as possible, because he'll come back and score 15 goals in five games against us or some nonsense like that. So, you know, it's, you're right. The problem for the Canucks is they've got to put, they've got to reel off like a, in a 10 game span, 8 or 9 wins to try to dig themselves out of this hole. And, you know, we'll talk more about the rest of the league, but their schedule has been atrocious. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one thing missing from Francesco's tweet string. It was, and I'm going to go with the league, make sure we never get a crappy schedule like this again, because this is outrageous. And, you know, our guys have been ground into the dirt, and we've had 4 practices in an entire season.
Yeah.
That was what was missing. Like, okay, that's great. You believe in Jim. Okay. But, you know, let's move forward and find other solutions to these problems.
But that happens every year. Like, you just think, what are management going to the league and saying? Like, clearly they have no bargaining chips, because Canucks get screwed over every time, because Canucks are always going to have the worst schedule, like, even if the league is being really even-handed, because of where Vancouver is, it's going to have a tough schedule, sure. But the amount of times over the last few years they've had to, like, go on the most random East Coast road trips where they're, like, instead of playing all the cities in the Northeast, they're playing, like, a city in the Midwest and then like a city in the East and then back to the Midwest or something strange like that. And like this season, I know there's no perfect way to do it because of COVID and all the precautions you're taking and only playing these weird mini series. But yeah, it does seem like Canucks have found the worst end of the stick again. Also, as I talked about before, like there's no postponed games, right? Like it's just a relentless schedule.
Well, I think at some point the NHL is going to get into a situation where they have to actually slow down the North Division so that it doesn't finish well ahead of the other three based on what's going on in the U.S. But the context of going to legal, whether it's Francesco or Jim, I'm not entirely sure who, if not both, but there's something that Mike Gillis actually discussed when he was GM, was that he went to the league and said, hey, you know, we know we're going to have a bad schedule and you're going to send us on the road. We got a lot of travel. So why don't you go and you just send us on the road for as long as need be in a road trip. We'll go on the road and then you'll reward us by keeping us at home for a period of time. Like he, you know, leveraged that, you know, yeah, if you're going to have to abuse us, do it that way. Don't send us on these weird, quirky, you know, like, I actually envision it's like the heart monitor watching the Vancouver Canucks travel out east and then sort of come back. But even in this sort of, you know, weird North Division where there isn't a means to play close to home, the Vancouver Canucks are currently playing the Calgary Flames and then travel to Calgary for a game before having to come back home and then have a Winnipeg homestand. Like, why is it that that one game needed to be played in Calgary in between two? Like, that's the part that doesn't make sense to me. And I genuinely wonder if that's simply not, like, we don't know what conversation took place, but it just doesn't occur to me to be Trader Jim's specialty.
No. What is Trader Jim's specialty?
Yeah, no, that's amateur scouting.
I'm in the minority maybe, but I don't love the Canadian division. I think with Seattle coming in, this is our chance next year to make changes to the way things are scheduled. Like, we should be looking at what they do for Florida, Tampa, and trying to figure out how that would work for the Canucks and the Kraken. And I know some fans are like, oh, keep the Canadian division together forever. Not me. I'm like, you know, give me 6 games against the Kraken or 7 games against the Kraken. I don't need to see, I don't need to see Marky in town of 9 times a year.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're bang right there that like it offers a new opportunity to shake things up. I think they've done the best they could with such a terrible global situation. I do hate the series. Like, I don't want to play, even if it's against Seattle, I don't want to play 3 games in a row against the same team. I hate it. Like, I hate that it's just like, maybe it's because of the way the Canucks are playing, but I hate the fact that they're just doing the same things to you and they figure you out and they just do the same things to you. And I just, I don't know. I don't like it.
I'd argue what's missing is that playoff atmosphere when you have that many games in a row. Cause like the playoff concept is you sort of pound your opponent into the ground and the last one standing wins.
Sure. We're not in that getting context, that. Totally.
Right. And I understand that, well, it's a long season. You can't afford to pound anyone into ground, because by the time you do that, you have nothing left. But we're not necessarily getting sort of what I think we were sold with the, you know, three games in a row, four games in a row against the same team. On the note of the North Division, my struggle with the North Division, it's not that I don't like the fact that the Canadian teams play each other. It's that Vancouver now has a geographic rival coming into the league. There should be no way that the Vancouver doesn't go and play the Kraken 20 times. I mean, I exaggerate, 20 times in a season. Like, if the North Division occurs, Seattle would be the odd team out. Like, they'd keep Canada, and then you got the Battle of Alberta. You've got Ontario that mixes it up. Montreal and Winnipeg are in, sort of in that mix. You can't manufacture the rivalries.
I mean, anyhow, all of what you're saying makes sense, but right now there's a hard border in place and we can't do anything about that. No.
But I'm presumptively thinking the border might be open come September.
Yeah, no, totally.
Might be, but
maybe if Canucks have a new GM in September too, there might be an opportunity for some negotiations.
Well, funny you mention it. So let's actually, before we talk about the goings on with the world of a general manager in a Vancouver Canucks office, that thank you video for Markstrom, Tanev, and stalwart Josh Levo raised some concern amongst Canucks Twitter and fans in general. I will admit, I understand the need to have the thank you videos, but in a building with no fans, if they show it or they don't, am I that upset? I don't know if I have feelings on it. But I'm curious, how did the two of you feel about these videos in the first place, especially in a barn with no people to cheer them on?
You go ahead, Jordan. I have thoughts.
Okay. I think it's the dumbest thing going. Like Shea Weber played his 1,000th game, and remember, and he stood up and he waved to the empty arena, which, you know, was kind of funny.
Yes.
And then you have this tribute video. Look, Tanev and Markstrom didn't even look up. Maybe Josh Levo was weeping on the bench. I don't know. He was probably excited to be included in something. But, like, there's no fans there. Release it on Canucks.com. You know, hey, we want to thank Marky. But it's just weird to have, you know, Besser and Petey having to stick tap for guys who are stoning them on the other end. Look, we all know the storylines. There's no fans in the arena. By the time we finally do have fans in the arena, we're going to have full-on hatred for Markstrom for all the games he's robbed us of this season. So, you know, the moment will have passed. Yeah. You can kind of move on. I didn't love it. But on the other hand, I didn't really buy into the Twitter outrage over, three of them shoehorned into the same video. I'm like, they're only doing the video because it's assumed that there should be a video in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it actually seems like I'm pretty similar to Jordan. I didn't get the outrage at all. Like, I think what happens is fans are mad. They're mad that, like, Jim Benning let all these players go. Even if, like, the contracts that Marky and Tanev signed weren't that palatable, the way they were treated in the season and the offseason was not great at all. Josh Levo was such a cheap option that we could have re-signed. That's what people are mad about. Like, how many seconds, like, should we have done, like, a 10-second Josh Levo tribute and a 30-second Chris Tanev? Like, it doesn't matter. As you said, the players don't care. I do think they had to do something, but it's just a token throwaway thing. You can't ignore Josh Levo. Like, that's disrespectful. He was injured and fought his way back to try and play for the team. He didn't give as much to the team, but he didn't really get the opportunity to. Like, I think what they did was fine. If there were fans in the stadium, sure, like, go off, like, put a tribute video each. But as it was, I think it was fine. I think people are just mad about other stuff.
I think you're right. People were definitely mad about a lot of things. So that was probably not the best time to have let's be honest. If they're going to show the video, it's the first matchup at home. Totally get it. My problem is without people in the building, it just comes across as completely contrived, completely fake. I hearken back to Luongo's first game in Vancouver after he was traded to Florida. And, you know, we were, I think last episode, Anna, you and I were talking about this, how we're both there at the game. And yeah. Luongo got like the, we saw the thank you, Lou video. He was getting cheered the entire game. Like pretty much that was a home game for the Panthers. It's the fans that made the sort of environment buzz. And when you take them out, Luongo doesn't care if he gets a video. And if you release it online, you've probably done yourself your fan connection. And being that it's online, you don't have to worry about doing it in the second period, you know, TV timeout or how much time you put to each player. You can have three different videos. Now, if I happen to be in the building, if let's say the pandemic wasn't happening, we're all in the building and that occurred, I don't feel Josh Levo gets inserted into a Tanev or Markstrom video. I think they you do three separate videos. That's my opinion, but it is what it is. I just, in my mind, was I losing sleep over how the Canucks did the thank you video? No, I was busy losing sleep over the fact that Jim Benning was still general manager.
Totally.
Yeah, Canuck fans, I think, are certainly right now with, like, there's the losses. There's just the general mental health over the pandemic. There's the fact that you feel disconnected from so many things, including the team. And then you throw this on top and, you know, TSN 1040 as well. You throw all these layers on and, like, Canuck Twitter at the best of times is a pretty grumpy, negative place. But
no.
I feel like the gleam in the eye is a little bit gone from Canuck's Twitter. Like, we used to be cranky, but with a little bit of a wink. And now we're just cranky. And the Canucks need to remember that when they're dealing with these sort of issues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sort of as the segue to the fact that Trader Jim's still in employed with Vancouver Canucks and Canucks quitter being surly, Francesco felt the desire or need or who knows what, but felt the need to get out in front of this issue because he was totally in front of it. He was not caught at all behind the eight ball here. If for some reason you missed it on, this weekend, so this Saturday, February 13th, he dropped, was it six tweets here? One, two, three, six separate tweets in a nice thread as to what's going on and the rumors that are surrounding his team. I commented about this on Stead of the Anthems, but prior to those tweets, that had actually been the longest period of time that Francesco had gone on Twitter without a tweet. We are talking about a full 2-week period with nothing. You have to go back to like middle of the summer before the resumption of NHL play to find a period of time that he had not been active. So it was kind of weird that he hadn't dropped his, this really feels like a playoff atmosphere or we'll get him next time boys tweets. The tweets themselves though talked about it's a unique year. There's, you know, lots of things going on, take some time. Yeah, we're disappointed about the poor start, but we've got a plan and the plan is in place. He acknowledges that our fans are passionate and knowledgeable and they have every right to be expressing themselves. But gosh darn it, when the media starts doing this, oh, that's not right. And I felt I needed to get out in front of this by saying that I have full confidence in Jim, Travis, and this group. So, when is it that Jim, Travis, and this group are not with the Vancouver Canucks? Because generally speaking, when you have to come out and say you have full confidence with people, the expectation is you probably don't have full confidence. But, I mean, I'm not, you know, an owner or anything here.
Yeah, I mean, to me, growing up as a football fan, that would be, like, literally they'd be fired. The person that they had full confidence in would be fired within a couple of days. But hockey's not quite as dramatic as that, maybe, but I do think it doesn't mean then that Jim's not getting fired. It just means he's not getting fired right now. And as for the shots of the media are reporting the mood, and the mood is, and the mood from, like, Canucks Twitter, for sure, is, like, very anti-Jim Benning. The mood, it, like, within the organization from very reputable sources is not very positive to Jim Benning either. They're doing their job. That was a cheap shot, in my opinion.
And there's two phrases that stick out in that tweet stream. The first is, progression is not always a straight line. And he's correct. You know, obviously, progression is not always a straight line up. But, you know, who fed him that line? Like, who planted that little thought in his mind that that's okay. I'm a little curious about that. And then the four words that completely take away from my full confidence are, of course, I'm disappointed. And okay, so progression is not a straight line, and you've got full confidence in these guys, but of course, I'm disappointed. Okay, you know, that to me, you know, puts a lot of fuel on the, you know, fire Jim Benning at the end of the season. Listen, it's no secret. The Aquilini's major revenue sources have been disproportionately affected by the COVID pandemic. You know, they're into hospitality. They own restaurants. They own the Canucks, which is obviously a big tourism business as well as a big entertainment business and restaurants. You know, housing has slowed a little bit. You know, the deal with the Squamish and Tsleil-Waututh tooth has slowed just slightly. So there's all these things that have kind of layered on. And, you know, if he has full confidence in Travis, Travis would be extended, right? Like, you know, he wouldn't be a lame duck coach in it with whatever we have left, 40 games left or 38 games left. So it's mixed messaging. He had to say something. And if he wasn't ready to pull the trigger on Jim now, then he has to come out and say he has confidence in them. And, you know, at the end of the season, I guess, you know, all bets are off and you can take care of Jim and move on.
The situation is so surreal, though. Jim is currently on the first year of a three-year extension. There's no way that I think the Aquilini family has the appetite to pay him so early in the deal to not work for them. Mm-hmm. Yet, it's, as you pointed out, you know, a guy in charge of a lame duck coach. Like, if Travis isn't coming, like, this is what's so weird. If you're not going to bring Travis back, I get this, that if you think you might no longer have the management team in place, they might want, you know, you're giving them full flexibility on whatever is going to happen. So how does that make someone like Travis Green feel? Like, here's a guy who doesn't know if he's sort of coming or going. And then on turn, if, let's say, Jim truly wants to bring Travis back, I imagine he has to go upstairs and ask for permission at this point. So really, is Jim in charge? Like, this is, I guess, you know, we were sort of talking about this in C4 Discord before Francesco came out with his Twitter thread and what would happen. And so one of the rumors that picked up a lot of smoke over the last sort of few days prior to that was the possibility of Mike Gillis coming back, there being an existing relationship, but him coming back in the role of like president of hockey operations, having his own general manager put in place, you know, thought being, could it be someone like Lawrence Gilman out of Toronto? And then some people thought Roberto Luongo, which I like Lou, but I'm not entirely sure as a Canucks fan, I'm keen on someone cutting their teeth at this point in their career. And this point of the organization. And every time we sort of started this conversation up, someone would say, well, what about a caretaker GM like Weisbrot? And I'm thinking, well, geez, just leave Trader Jim in place, please.
Yeah, I think one thing that Aquilini is definitely not keen on is caretaker GM. If they are getting rid of Jim Benning, they'll want someone lined up, like permanent lined up. And you may be right that they're worried that they don't want to scare off a new GM with a existing extended coach, but Travis Green is one of the most sought after coaches in the NHL. I think though he would very easily find another job, so I don't think you're going to have an issue bringing on a new GM with Travis Green under an extension at all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just hope they're having conversations with Travis about this, because you really don't want to get to the point where Travis says, well, you know, the Troy Stetcher issue of, you guys haven't said anything, you haven't offered me a new deal, I need a job, I'm going. Like, that's like the worst possible scenario for me.
Well, you know how it is. Sometimes you just run out of time.
Well, I come from a bit of a political background, obviously. And so, you know, what you would do with Jim and his contract is you would just layer over him. You know, the Clinton campaigns were famous for this. They would have a campaign manager, and then they'd get tired of that person and want to fire them, but they couldn't fire them because it would look bad for the campaign. So they'd layer over a campaign director and then a campaign chairman and then a campaign, you know, czar. And then, you know, you kind of just layer over Jim if you wanted to still try to get some value for his contract. And, you know, I do think that most people give Jim a lot of credit on the scouting side. he'd be a very expensive scout, but at the same time, it's better than, you know, firing him and I guess and sending him home from him if you're trying to do a cost control point of view. But those words about being disappointed, that to me just, that's the most telling. It's probably the most honest thing in those tweets from Aquilini. Like, you know, they are a family that lives in the community, hears all this stuff, wants to win. And despite the fact that they do have a lot of businesses, the Canucks really are the crown jewel in their family's overall holdings. And certainly the one that drives most of their philanthropy and you know, Canuck Place and the Autism Network and things like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, they can't ignore it. They can't ignore it, and they can't, they just can't have Canuck fans clamoring. Well, it's not even clamoring now. It's, you know, open, it's an open rebellion against Trader Jim.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'm just going to say that I didn't pick up on that when I read the thread, but I think you're right, Jordan, that like you could have easily said, I know it's disappointing for fans, or like some measure of words that didn't sort of suggest some kind of unrest. And as you say, Canucks are the crown jewel. None of their other businesses have great reputations. Like Aquilini's property group has a terrible reputation in the property like market in terms of how good it is to work there. Their like fruit business isn't great. The lacrosse business is interesting. I can't imagine it takes a lot of money to run the lacrosse team, but it doesn't make any money either. So like the Canucks, like they really need to sort their house out in terms of that, I think.
The curiosity of mine, we talked about this on Instead of the Anthems, but maybe you can ask you this, Jordan. If there were fans in the barn right now, Canucks fans in general don't tolerate too much, and they will quite vocally express displeasure. Case in point, that game I talked about where it was a home game for the Panthers when Luongo came back, Vancouver Canucks fans will vocally share their malcontent. If there were fans in seats, do you think we're talking about an entirely different situation? Even if it was like 2,000 fans in the building, because I think 2,000 is probably a good number to get the boo birds out.
Yeah, I mean, 2,000 Larscheiders can do a lot, right, to move the needle. I think probably it's one thing, you know, for a guy like Aquilini, I think Twitter is, it's a measuring stick, but he wouldn't consider Twitter to be real life, like real, the real fans. It's the snipey mm-hmm. fans, it's the media, it's that sort of thing. You know, the real fans are that silent majority who are buying their Pedersen jerseys and, you know, their kids' Quinn Hughes t-shirts and things like that. And they're not really that angry, you know, because they understand. Well, if you actually see them in the building, and it's not just the, you know, the free people on Twitter, but it's actually the folks ponying up hundreds of dollars to be there. And the Aquilini's measure game experience every single game. So, you know, there's surveys done of fans after every single game, and they can rate the you know, what the number is and all of that. Well, if the fan experience starts to dip, they're very sensitive to that particular metric. So I think you're right. I think if there were even 2,500 fans in the building, you know, with signs at warm up and, you know, Larscheider chants on firing Jim, a lot could happen very quickly.
Man, if the Larscheiders were to turn on Jim,
what a world!
I mean, having been, you know, in the depths of the Larscheiders, it's not usually their style, but they're definitely like that. Well, there would be a chunk of people doing it for sure.
Well, so I mean, we've talked about, Ann and I sort of talked about this, but a podcast formed by other Larscheiders, but not affiliated with the Larscheiders, but called the Larschcast, which take it as whatever you want. Even they, who have been strong supporters of team positivity-ish, were calling for Jim's tenure to end. So again, I'm not trying to say that they speak for the Larscheiders, but if that group has started to turn, it's not a stretch to think others might have as well.
Does Quinn have a sea shanty coming about firing?
Well, then, yeah, if that's what everyone needs to know. We're going to take ourselves here a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast and CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word. Well, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
We normally jump in a half full, half empty. This week, though, I think it's time for us to break out the F word. Why? Because of what took place last week here in the Sports Talk Radio ecosystem in Vancouver. Setting this up a little bit, Sports Talk Radio didn't really exist in Vancouver until, I want to say, it was Mojo that started first and then Team 1040. But the concept of two Sports Talk Radio stations in Vancouver actually existed long time ago. The dominant player, though, was Team 1040, eventually became TSN 1040. You then saw TSN 1040 also become TSN 1410 for a spell. And then TSN 1410 sort of went away, and we had Sportsnet 650 enter the market when Rogers went and acquired the rights to broadcast Vancouver Canucks games on radio. Despite the Vancouver Canucks broadcast rights going over to 650, TSN 1040 held a dominant place in the sports talk radio market here in Vancouver. They held the broadcast rights to the BC Lions, the MLS Vancouver Whitecaps. You heard Toronto Blue Jays games on. Like, there was, Mariners. They held sort of sports, but they also had the personalities. They had a strong foothold. And if you looked at purely the numbers, 1040 had solid numbers. If we look across their numbers in the sports talk market across the country, while they were second to Toronto, if we actually factor in population, Vancouver's sports talk radio foothold with TSN 1040 was arguably stronger than their brethren or sister station in Toronto. So the news that Bell decided to pull the plug at 9 a.m., well, I guess it would have been 9:30 when they dropped the robo voice, last week, was it a Monday? It was Tuesday. We had recorded on the Monday. It was Tuesday. Just rocked the landscape. And I was emotional. For those of you who listened to the show last week, you heard my cold open. I don't know why I was upset. I honestly can't tell you. I don't have a personal connection to that station. I don't know any of the people that work either in front of the microphone or behind the microphone, outside of casual conversation, maybe in passing or on Twitter. But there was this community feel. Like, I felt like it was part of me and sort of my sports intake. Like, I can tell you where I was when the poker fight occurred. I was driving down Granville, turning left on West 41st. Like, I can actually tell you specific moments in time that were all around TSN 1040. And to have Bell just decide, we're going to pull the plug, we're going to restart, and we're going to rebrand and become funny, which I'm sure we'll get into, just again, does not compute. I do not understand the decision. I get that maybe, like, they arguably say the money wasn't there, but it just doesn't occur to me that the money will ever be there in the concept they've introduced now. So again, there is just so much that doesn't make sense. But Jordan, you know, we have you on the show here, and you obviously, you know, have an opinion as well, and you're in a special place because, unlike someone like myself or Anna, who might be able to share our discontent and, you know, determine how we deal with this by simply switching our radio dial or radio streaming network, you actually had the ability to go and speak with money. So you want to tell us a little bit about first how you reacted to the news and felt about it, and two, sort of what happened next?
Yeah, like you, Chris, I was shocked. I was horrified by the way these people were treated. After 21 years of building a loyal fan base, they weren't even given the decency to have a final show each or a final week of shows. There was no goodbye. It was just turned off. And then the Green Day song, which I chalk up more to incompetence than to malice, but the fact that it was titled Good Riddance certainly rubs salt in the wounds. I'm the VP of Communications and Marketing for the Independent Contractors and Businesses Association, ICBA. We're a construction association. We also do training and benefits and things like that. So back when Jeff Patterson and the late Jason Botchford started the PatCast, they threw out that they needed sponsors, and I signed ICBA up for that because, you know, they were reaching obviously a very targeted market, generally younger men, which is exactly who works in construction. Eventually migrated over to doing advertising on TSN 1040. We sponsored the Seahawks post-game show this year. We've done NHL drafts for 2 years. Every time a kid from BC was selected, we'd use our tagline, you know, another BC-built, BC-strong player. It's our ICBA tagline, and promote their profile. And then we were sponsoring JPAT's hits last year and this year as well. And, you know, you make, as an advertiser, you make decisions. You build a marketing plan around, you know, this niche market that they had. And yeah, their ratings weren't as high as, you know, the Christmas station or you know, or even 980. But they had the demographic we wanted, which was, you know, generally young people aged 18 to 40. And those aren't people who listen to radio generally. But when they do, they listen to sports radio. And, you know, if you'd listened to TSN 1040 in the last few months, you would have heard lots of construction companies, lots of associations targeting their audience there. So when they treated these folks that poorly, you know, I kind of, first of all, I didn't know who to call to cancel my contract because everyone was being laid off. So, you know, like, who do you talk to about, you know, what was going on? You know, I slept on it for a night, and the next day I woke up and I'm like, no, you know, this is not the way to treat people. I don't want to be involved in this at all. Made sure that they weren't going to air any more of our ads. You know, Bell actually circled back to us and offered us free airtime on Funny. Bluntly, you know, Chris and I, like, they could offer us, they could pay us to put ads on Funny, and we still wouldn't do it because I think the way they treated those folks was so shabby. And my sense is that, you know, TSN 1040, Team 1040 fans are so upset about this that they're going to punish any company that, you know, is on that Funny station for the first little bit. But, you know, we pulled our ads, tweeted it out, you know, got a lot of thanks from folks because we were able to speak a little bit with our checkbook. Here's the interesting thing. Our my understanding is in a meeting the next day, the GM claimed that they'd lost $9 million over 12 years. Now, that's a lot of money, but 12 years is an interesting number to pick as your window for a business. Like, 12 years, really, Bell? Like, we're going back 12 years? Like, 12 years, like, we're pre-Olympics, like 12 years ago. And they picked it because the Canuck broadcasting rights were with Team 1040 back in the day, and that was a very expensive buy. And actually, I don't think they have lost that much money, if any, in the last pre-COVID years. And if they had, like, what frustrates me, if you are losing money, cut costs first. But this is a radio station that, you know, added Rick Dollywall, you know, a year or so ago when he came on the market, as they should, because Rick's a fantastic reporter and any sports station would be lucky to have him. But, you know, they weren't in cost-cutting mode. They never, you know... It was weird. It was weird. I don't like it. I don't like how they treated the community, and I certainly don't like how they treated JPAT and Matt Sakaris and Blake and those guys, Halford Ruff, and the producers, the folks who made the show. So, you know, we were, you know, we're not going to be on Funny. We're not going to advertise there. We're definitely going to move away from that. And I think Bell has a lot of work to do to try to repair the relationship with this market, if they ever even can.
The just before you interject there, Anno, the thing that strikes me most, and this is sort of going back when you talked about sort of a song titled Good Riddance and being incompetent. I'll bet you the person that said, oh, let's play Time of Your Life because we're going to celebrate this. Like, if you read that email from Wade Oosterman talking about, you know, making tough decisions, evolving media landscape, and the GM talking about, you know, we're going to celebrate 20 years, but it was time to make a shift. It feels to me it was a complete misread. And making matters worse is so long as Bell owns that 1040 spot on the dial, that license, I think they've made that toxic. They could go and put something phenomenal there. But if there's one thing that Vancouver sports fans have is a long memory. I mean, let's be honest, Vancouver Canucks fans hold grudges forever. Like, we still hate the New York Rangers from 94. Mark Messier is dead, and then he comes into Vancouver and, you know, does what he is. Boston will never be a team that a Vancouver Canucks fan will ever rally behind. Like, there's, we hold grudges, and so I just feel like there's a complete misread on the market.
I completely agree. I just think Vancouver is a small town. It really is. It might be a city, but it's, like, having moved here from elsewhere, it's such a small town. Like, the hockey market just is so small. Everyone, if you're on, like, Canucks Twitter and just vaguely pay attention, you know, like, all the personalities. And I'll be honest, I don't listen to the radio. I don't drive, and, like, I don't know. It's just not in my DNA to listen to the radio. I pick up 1040 hits all the time, but I wouldn't tune into the radio. But, like, it's just such a popular thing. And I just think they'll have completely misread the idea. I don't know Toronto as a market, but I feel like it's very different. Whereas, like, there's such loyalty from fans. Like Rick Dhaliwal, for example, had such a huge following that people just went to 1040 and said, well, we're going to stick with him. And yeah, I don't think there was an issue. Yeah, like, I get it, COVID difficulty, but the government gave them a bunch of money so they didn't have to do this. And I don't know if we've seen the extent of where that money really went. And I feel like there's even more bad stuff to come out of the woodwork, honestly, and just leaves a bad taste in the mouth. It really does. And you're right, I don't think Canucks fans will move on at all easily.
You know, Jordan, you mentioned the cost cutting part as being an option, because they didn't cost cut. Well, they did. They cut everything. But you look at, like, sort of Sportsnet 650 and what Rogers has done. I mean, right now, Scotty Rintoul is a host for a show that is aired in two markets. His show is in Vancouver and Calgary. Why? Because Rogers is arguably trying to run a real lean ship in both of these sort of sports talk spaces. It is odd that Bell wouldn't go and use what numbers it has. Like, it had decent numbers, pandemic, you know, included. Yeah, you're missing out on someone like me who's maybe not listening in his car and his commute and that, but you're still getting me tuning in. I'm streaming, I'm hearing, like, this is on. It's not anymore, obviously. But why not then embrace that part, like the digital evolution? Like, I find, like, Wade Oosterman's email talking about, oh, or it's a, you know, evolving media landscape. No kidding. So why not evolve? And why I bring this up is Rob Fay, who arguably was working extremely hard in the short time that he was on the dial with his show, had a huge following. And tonight, after the Vancouver Canucks play, he's going live on Twitch, Facebook Live, YouTube. Like, he is creating this digital transformation. So two things strike me here. One, could Bell not have explored how to take that 1040 brand and maybe come more lean in its operation? Like, I'm not going to say that maybe that's not something that needs to happen, but then embrace that evolution. But instead, their evolution is like, well, we're going to go and we're going to go with funny radio, and it works in other markets. I think in Toronto, it's currently sitting at the bottom of all radio stations. Like the only way I could see it working is that they're paying so little for the ability to go and put the stuff on air that whatever little comes in ad revenue somehow makes it break even. But, you know, I'm curious, like, if that digital evolution had taken place where, like, the likes of Rob Fay or whomever, you know, Halford and Brough, I think would have been well suited. I believe, you know, someone like Andy Cole and T-Mart probably would have been able to. I'm taking a shot at Moj and Donnie here, because they were probably the two last to embrace the digital evolution. But again, like, there's opportunity to evolve your station, but no, your choices, we're going to go and we're just going to turn it off. Oh, and on that note, let's go and turn off the Twitter account, so we lose all of those people and now get to celebrate only less than 100 people who follow us and get our tweets ratioed to oblivion. Like, that would have still happened, but at least you would have had more followers.
The Twitter,
it speaks to me as a company that doesn't get it.
Yeah, the Twitter was crazy, Chris. Like, you have, I forget what they had, but they probably had 100,000 followers or something like that, or whatever it was. and you just delete the account? Like, no, that's actual currency. And, you know, a well thought out plan would have been like, okay, you know, we're going to drop some jokes and try, you know, try to make it funny and, you know, try to pivot it. And knowing that a bunch of people would unsubscribe and hate tweet us, but, you know, still at least holding on to some sort of nucleus there. I do think you're right about finding other avenues. I always found it weird that, you know, Patterson and now Thomas Durant's podcast was an Athletic production and not a TSN 1040 mm-hmm. show and production. Like, you know, I don't know the podcast charts, but one presumes that, you know, the VanCast is, you know, just by, you know, virtue of having the Athletic support is, you know, number one in our kind of little Canuck land. But, you know, it was never hardly ever mentioned on TSN 1040. It was never broadcast on there. Like, you had these options. It's just, it was so poorly handled by people who did not understand. There's an emotional connection that sports brings between host and listener that you don't get in other things. And this is what Paul Chapman and I were talking about over Twitter, a former TSN 1040 host who I still feel like I have a relationship with, even though he hasn't been on the station in 6 years, right? He works for the Vancouver province now. But mm-hmm. he's like, you know, in board meetings at the province, you know, I'll talk about how, look, you know, no one's, you know, if a political decision or a BC budget or whatever, no one's out in the streets, you know, rioting about that or, you know, no one's buying, you know, John Horgan jerseys and putting them on. But there's something special about sports that creates that connection. And Bell just seemed to have completely forgotten that. And worse, they, you know, completely like taken the lighter and burned the bridge behind them, like Homer Simpson leaving the nuclear plant.
Well, it should be pointed out that, you know, one of the other sports talk stations in Winnipeg that Bell had the rights to that also has reformatted, they recently lost the Jets broadcast rights to the Global radio station. And there is some thought that Bell is only holding on to sports talk radio so long as they have hockey broadcast rights. But if in Canada, and Annie, you sort of pointed this out where, you know, from a market perspective, if hockey is it, TSN 1040, despite losing hockey, still held its own in its weight class. And I'm not knocking 650 here. I mean, 650 and 1040 were in a battle. I don't think anyone ever sort of viewed 650 as winning outside of the Canucks club. Yeah. But
I mean, Botch covered this quite a bit in the Athletics, but if there was radio wars, like, despite having the rights, like, Sportsnet 650 should have been running away, like, with the figures, and they were not. So it really speaks to what TSN 1040 were bringing mm-hmm. to the table without broadcast rights. And it's, yeah, it just seems tone deaf at every turn. I think you're right, like, Jordan, like, the Twitter strategy is completely off. The way, yeah, the handling of the firing was just completely off. And yeah, it just speaks to a complete misunderstanding of the Vancouver market, really.
Yeah, just to say, like, you know, I miss those guys. I, you know, drive into to our office in Metrotown from where I live in Langley. And, you know, I miss hearing Helfer and Bruff in the morning. And you know, I miss having that easy spot for Canuck Talk and you know, the professionals there. So it's going to be a big hole. And I do wonder how long it'll be before, you know, it's not my reflex to automatically try to hit the AM dial when I get in the car in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, like, Helfer and Bruff created Shotgun Jake. Like, what mm-hmm. other market would that happen where, like, these two radio hosts hosting the morning show just, like, completely created a culture within the fan base? Like, oh, anyway, crazy.
Well, I think that is a testament to how well connected they were to the Canucks community. Right. They were arguably a pillar. That might be because of the 20 years that they had of experience. But they, even through the evolution from team to TSN and the loss of Canucks rights, they always understood the community well. And when they lost Canucks rights, I think the smartest thing that they did is they shook off the house radio brand that they were either fairly or unfairly, you know, tagged with and embraced that we're not house radio. And let's have fun with that. It's just one of the reasons why, like, if you were given an opportunity, and again, I'm not knocking 650. I now that they're the only player in the market, it's important that 650 remain. But if you had to turn the radio dial to a post game, Who are you listening to? Were you listening to 650 or are you listening to 1040? If I was in the barn, I listened to the 1040 post game. And that's despite not having the same access to the players post game or Travis Green or what have you, or having to run with, you know, Canadian press audio. That was fine because it was the analysis and the conversation and the fact that they just felt like they were friends that I chat with at the bar.
Totally.
Yeah. You're here.
We'll take a short break before we dive into Half Full, Half Empty. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast and CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Figured we'd do a couple, you know, quick odds and ends here in this this segment, but I wanted to obviously spend the entire effort talking about the F that was given to Bell, both as a grade and other synonymous means. But let's look at the Vancouver Canucks week ahead. So as we talked about briefly in Rewind, Vancouver Canucks play Calgary. They then play Winnipeg for a spell. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering, like, what is it that we expect from this team? Like, do we want now to see consistent good efforts? If we think back to the Toronto game, that last Toronto game where they lost, but at least it was a good effort. The Calgary game where they lost, but at least it was a good effort. Calgary win, good effort. Like, is that what we're wanting? Is that consistent, good effort? Is that enough for us as Canucks fans to maybe tide us by?
It's not enough to be a playoff team. Like, we need to start putting up the points. Good efforts are great, but you can't build a playoff run on moral victories.
Boy, if we could, though, we'd have all the banners. I think it's so hard because we keep playing the same teams over and over and over again. And it just feels like it's our flaws that are being exposed and not theirs. So for me, they've got to solve the Markstrom riddle. They have to get past. Next time they play Montreal, they have to shut Toffoli out. You know, they have to start kind of stamping out some of these storylines, along with winning, and they need to put together. I think they need to win. They need a 10-game stretch where they win 8 or 9 games or get points in 9 games just to get back somewhat into the race. I don't know. It's not to quote Francesco, but I'm disappointed. this was a playoff team last year. We were hoping that they would, you know, be a playoff team this year. Something's not right. Like, maybe that's the other quality too, is like JT Miller has got to look like the JT Miller from last year. Not this kind of shadow of himself, like this poor decision maker that we see this year. I mean, how many times have we seen a little bit of possession finally in the offensive zone, and then it's Miller who seems to make the bad pass or flip it backwards or turn it over? Like, it just, that didn't happen last year. So, you know, we need to see those guys improve, but I don't think effort alone isn't going to soothe the angry Canuck horde.
Yeah, well, I mean, just saying the playoffs last year was Canucks overextending themselves, like, big time. And the same thing is true this year and last, if not more so, that they lack depth. So if the top two lines aren't performing, then it looks quite bleak.
We've had this conversation on the show before, but this is a team of what-ifs. And if the what-ifs don't actually turn out, things don't go well. And I feel that last season was when the what-ifs cashed in. Like, what if the Vancouver Canucks are healthy? What if the top line is able to produce? What if you get goaltending? What if the blue line is, you know, holds it together? And what did we see? That was the answer in the playoffs. In fact, they were a game within Demcoing the Golden Knights to go through on that series, right? So, you know, that was the maybe one what if that didn't unfortunately cash in, but I still think the Vancouver Canucks are ahead. offseason, what if Toffoli comes back? What if Markstrom comes back? What if Tanev comes back? We didn't get any of those. I think I would have settled for one. We got none. What if the Vancouver Canucks are able to improve? One might say they've improved the blue line, but they didn't improve up front.
Nate Schmidt has yet to prove himself, so he looked like an improvement, but we've yet to see Vegas Schmidt on the ice, so...
You know, Chris Tanev's made Noah Hanifin a superstar in Calgary. Their puck possession numbers are unbelievable. Their shots controlled is unbelievable. And you look at Quinn Hughes without Chris Tanev, and you're like, ooh, you watch him, and you're like, well, he's getting a lot of points, but then, you know, so did Sergei Zubov, right? Like, is he really controlling games? Is he really the future Norris winner we were talking about last summer? I hope so, but he sure looked better with Tanev rather than, you know, the revolving door that's passing by.
I was just saying the one what if that cashed in was the Hoglander debut. I mean, what if a young player is able to go and find their way into the roster? There's a positive there. But then you brought up Tanev and how he's, you know, mastering his craft or helping others master their craft in Calgary. Anyone taking a look at Troy Stetcher's numbers in Detroit? Because let me tell you, it would be nice to have those numbers here in Vancouver, but hey, what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, what Canucks needed was for cheap options and
I mean, Troy was so expensive.
Out. That's the thing. Troy was cheap. Toffoli ended up being way cheaper than we thought he was. Like, Canucks fans would have signed that deal every single day. Hoglander cashed in. Like, for sure, that's a cheap option that's worked out. But Petey and Quinn... are cheap options, they're about to become very expensive options. So I just think like Canucks have made their bed with their like really expensive bottom six, and they banked on too many things working out. Like, as you see, all these what ifs, you can't like get all of them working out. It's never going to happen.
What if the Canucks had cap space?
I mean, yeah, that would make all the problems go away, but.
Well, I point out the Vancouver Canucks did have cap space, but they that didn't work out. That's more on what if you actually had a GM that could capitalize on cap space?
It's not just losing the players. It's the chemistry that disappeared, right? Like, you didn't just lose randos on the team, you know, Tanev, they all called him dad, right? Like, you know, he was clearly very important to Hughes. You lose Markstrom, who, you know, apparently was a rare goalie who was considered a leader in a room. You know, Toffoli, you know, really seemed to light up that group. Like, they seemed to genuinely like him. And then Stetcher, I mean, you know, I follow Brock Besser on Instagram. There's Stetcher, you know, they hang out all summer. You know, there's Stetcher in Minnesota. There's Brock hanging out in Richmond, right? Like, you know, you lose that, the guts of the team. You know, it's just like any other workplace. Your friends leave or the people you know, respect leave, and you're left there kind of holding the bag wondering, well, what the hell am I doing here? This is all I have left. Yeah, no wonder they're so discombobulated.
That's so valid. And I think Sportsnet really whiffed on their segment, their intermission segment on Thursday when they discussed this. They, you know, completely dismissed the idea of players being human and missing their friends, missing leaders. Also completely missed the fact that it's not just about, like, they're missing the players that have gone. It's about what it says about the direction the team's going. You know, like, that's not good for a player's, you know, mentality to see, like, the management treat players that badly and also just take a nosedive development-wise.
I'm glad you brought that up because that actually reminds me. I had a conversation with a few friends about that segment and how the thought was, oh, well, these are professional players. If they're upset that their friends are not here, boy, they, you know, they're going to be in top level. I have never been in a professional sports dressing room, but I've been in professional organizations where organizational behavior and the science behind it, you know, actually resonates well, that when you don't actually have, you don't have faith in management, you start to see that impact your performance. Even the highest performers will start to struggle if they don't get the vision, or at least understand what the vision happens to be, if they're not provided the right level of direction. It also starts to impede organizational behavior when you see high performers or top performers not recognized as such, or those who aren't performing really well get miscast as top performers. There is science here. I can't imagine sports is immune to the science of organizational behavior. So to have them come out and say, oh, that's just not happening, I'm sorry, unless they're Tommy Larshide, who happens to go in the room to find out that Pavel Bure's groin is okay, they don't actually know. Was it Bure's groin that Tommy checked on? I think it was Bure's groin.
Checking on Pavel Bure's groin, and it feels great, Chris. New England Patriots, right? You take Tom Brady out of that organization, you put him into Tampa, he goes on, wins a championship, and the chemistry in New England falls apart. Same coach, same supporting cast, by and large. And Brady is such a powerful force within the dressing room, he can bring head case Antonio Brown in, have him move into the mansion with him and Giselle, and still win a championship. You can bring Gronk, who is like has admitted that he was basically fudging sprints on Zoom during, during Tampa practice weeks. Like, you know, I would wear different shirts and do my runs in one day, and then you know send them one per week to the coaches. But it works because you have this powerful force kind of uniting them. Chemistry is huge in any organization, any team, whether it's whether it's you two on the podcast or whether it's, whether it's a professional hockey dressing room. And you can see it in their body language. You can see it in their, the F-bombs that happen. I mean, Horvat's swearing and JT's swearing and, until just recently, Pedersen looked miserable. Like, of course, like they're real humans. And, this idea that somehow they're not affected by what's gone on is just ridiculous.
On the note of chemistry, it appears that the NHL is having to rejig its own chemistry and updating their COVID protocols. So if you weren't already aware, the NHL has introduced some adjustments to the protocol, rapid testing being utilized more frequently, increasing the amount of airflow at the benches by removing the glass. And if you were curious, well, how does that work in those stadiums where there's fans? They've actually tarped off, I think, like the first 10 rows in those buildings. And that's, again, to try to keep people away from the players. Canada, or at least the Northern Division, had its first COVID protocol player with Jesse Puljujärvi, but that would have been the first. In the United States, though, we're seeing every division get hit. I was actually just looking at the games played, and I was genuinely shocked. There's only one team currently sitting at single digits, and that being the Devils. Though, as far as I know, Buffalo is currently in a world of hurt right now. They have 11 games, and that probably will stay that way. You've got the Stars, obviously, having already been impacted and need to reschedule. Like, I genuinely wonder if there's really anything that the NHL can do at this point to change its protocol that will actually not solve the problem, because I don't think there's any solution here short of, obviously, vaccination. But like, when do we seriously consider the season being extended because of the number of consecutive games that'll be played?
I mean, I think it's going to happen. Like, I think they're just, like, kidding themselves. They've been kidding themselves for a long time. I mean, rapid testing, why wasn't that already happening? That's crazy to me. The glass stuff, don't see it making a huge difference at all. We'll see. The numbers will bear it out, but I don't see anything improving to a point where we get the season done on time.
I don't think there's going to be a lot more delays. Like, I think we've probably seen the worst of it. Just attrition, right? Like, you can only get this once. Mm-hmm. So, if it's rippled through a team and five or six players have got it, that's five or six less that can get it again. The Americans are so far ahead of us on vaccinations, and depending on what state they are in, they may actually – there might be vaccinations for hockey players within a few weeks. And certainly in America, you could I don't think there'd be the same stigma as far as buying the vaccination as there would be in Canada. So, you know, I think we've probably seen the worst of it. Honestly, my great fear on coming on this podcast was that you guys would quiz me on the other divisions because we're so Canada-centric now. Arizona and St. Louis just played 7 games against each other in a row. Like, what? So, you know, unless it's rippled onto my fantasy hockey team, I have no idea what's going on in any of these other divisions. Who's on top? Mm-hmm. Who's good? Who's bad? Who's underperforming? Who's surprising? It's a crazy year.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm always a bit West-centric, but it's just, like, so focused now. And you're playing, like, the Canucks schedule especially has been relentless. So it's just, like, hardly any other time to pay attention to something not in your division. The St. Louis, Arizona is the only thing that really hit me. I did see the meme of, like, the weekend Super Bowl performance where he's going through the Hall of Mirrors, and I think Arizona posted us trying to find someone other than St. Louis to play, which made me laugh. But, like, yeah, it's going to take some juggling of schedules for sure. But maybe you're right, Jordan, like, with vaccinations catching up down there, that maybe they get there. I just think they may have be in too deep a hole already for them to end up finishing on time, but who knows?
Yeah. If there's one thing that's been going for the NHL is that the teams that have been affected, it hasn't functionally stopped a division. It's been like two teams, and they can sort of weather like a couple of teams here and there. It's when you start to see a divisional impact or a team like the Washington Capitals, who apparently have all of a sudden half their team need to go on to whatever stage of quarantine, because there's like 3 different stages. There's the close contact, the double negative, positive, whatever it was. But I genuinely wonder, you know, if it won't require some rejigging of the schedule to the point that it gets delayed. But then I never really considered it. The point that Jordan raised is that arguably NHL players in the United States will probably get vaccinated sooner than later. I can't, I don't know the political appetite here in Canada, if any provincial government would be keen on the news getting out that their team got vaccinated, no matter how it occurs. So,
yeah. And Gary's already said they won't be jumping the queue. So if you go back on that, it looks bad.
But like, if the queue, like this, it's not so much jumping the queue, but like, you know, if the provinces are able to sort of dictate their plan, it's arguable that a team might suddenly find itself in the window. And the trouble here is when you have like, you know, the so-and-so all get vaccinated here. And, you know, average Joe fan over here is like, well, wait a minute, my appointment's 2 months from now. It's a potato that I don't think anyone really wants to have to deal with. So.
Yeah. No, I think by the time the Stanley Cup playoffs start, that the American players will be vaccinated. Just judging by the numbers, I mean, yesterday, more Americans were vaccinated yesterday than Canadians have been vaccinated in total. So, like, the scale is ramping up, and there are places now that are starting to take, you know, normal humans, not the heroes that have been working the front lines, not those in long-term care, but, you know, and my suspicion is just by looking at the numbers is that Stanley Cup playoffs roll around, those American teams are going to be vaccinated, which arguably could be an advantage over whoever survives the Northern Division.
Out of the North Division, yeah. Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, who here had on their bingo card that power outages would delay games in Texas this season?
Not what I thought would happen.
This season.
I mean, I saw that game was delayed, and I was like, oh, yeah, like COVID outbreak in Dallas. And then I was like, oh, it's the snow. Okay.
It harkens back to, I think it was in like 96 or it might have been 94, where a Vancouver Canucks game got delayed due to snow. All because the Vancouver Canucks got snowed out of Vancouver. I think the Canucks were in like Calgary or something, and they could not fly into Vancouver. The airport closed. Making matters worse, the San Jose Sharks, who arrived the day before, because you know how we talked about scheduling, that's how it works, is that the road team is generally in Vancouver before the Canucks happen to be. They got trapped into Vancouver because, again, the airport was closed. And as a result, The Sharks had two games to get rescheduled, whereas the Canucks only one. So yeah, the fact that snow in Texas would have that impact, it should not be a surprise to Vancouverites like us.
We're delicate flowers when it comes to snow.
That's for sure.
We live in the tropical part of Canada. I'm curious how all the cherry blossoms are doing with that that batch of snow that we just had. I know the daffodils that were already up were a little cold. As we look to wrap our show up, I mean, it's been a long one, but I think, a good one. We obviously talked a little bit about what's going on in the world of the Vancouver Canucks. We talked about what was going on in TSN 40. We had a fabulous guest in Jordan to provide us context that I don't think many of us as fans have, especially as it pertains to 1040. And plus, he's friend of the show. I mean, this has got to be what? We're coming up to like 10 spots that you've been on, maybe more. It's been a while since we've heard your voice.
I don't know if it's that many, but always big fans. And, you know, it's funny, like, because I heard your, like I said, your cold open last week, Chris, and was honestly really touched by it and reached out to you and complimented you. And if there's one thing Chris loves, it's a good compliment to Anna. So it was, it meant a lot to hear it. And I love being on the show and love what you guys are doing and enjoy it. And, got to find all my as much Canuck talk as possible now in the podcast sphere in order to replace my TSN 1040 hits.
Yeah, if you're looking for Jordan on Twitter, it's at Jordan Bateman. I mean, again, you'll watch him especially during Canucks games, and he is one of us, clearly one of us. Let me tell you. But you mentioned the Canucks podcast sphere. Are there any other Canucks podcasts you listen to after you listen to C4? Because there's lots. I'm just curious. What else you might get in a rotation?
I listen to the VanCast. I listen to Quadrelli and Faber's, is it Canuck Conversations? I think that's the title.
Yeah.
So those are the three that are always at the top of the listen pile. I have to admit, I'm a big Green Bay Packer fan, so there's a lot. It's been a good year for them. A little disappointed at the end, but Packer content took up a lot more of my podcast space than Canuck content, but... yeah, those are the three, but I'm open for recommendations, so feel free to send them over if there are other good ones I should be trying out.
The space is some might say oversaturated. I talk about it as being well represented, and I think we're going to see more sort of Canucks specific podcasts come from those who, you know, are at TSN 2040 looking to evolve. Like, I would not be surprised to see some digital spin-ups occur. So I'm thinking it's good. Plus, if anyone else here, any of our listeners ever wants to start up Canucks podcast, I make it very clear. I'm more than willing to help you out. I view us all as a community. And as long as we are the longest running Canucks podcast out there, that's the only title I care about. You can't take that away from us yet. But what final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners there, Jordan?
I want to mention my little hobby that I've had over the last week. So I have a 11-year-old son who plays hockey, plays rep hockey in Langley, loves it. And so every year we build a little backyard rink and wait for the big deep freeze to come. And for the second straight year, we managed to pull it off. And this year he skated for three straight days in his own backyard and a little 16x16 rink. And it's good. It's my Walter Gretzky moment, guys, where I feel like, you know, I'm the great dad for the future hockey superstar, even though none of that will ever happen. But, it's a crazy thing that, you know, as a Lower Mainland kid growing up, I always kind of like desperately envied, those kids who got to skate year round in Edmonton or Ontario or wherever. So that was my little side project this week. So, you know, it's COVID, it's a pandemic, nothing else going on. You got to find these little hobbies to fill a week or two of your time. And the backyard rink was a nice little itch to scratch this week.
Do you do the frame with the sheet, or do you actually, have you expanded to having like the boards and what have you?
No boards yet. Like, honestly, last year we only had it up and running for about 36 hours before the weather turned on us. This year was great. It was more like 72, but the last nice day of fall, I'll put the frame out on the grass and then watch the weather app. And as soon as I see that there's going to be a week of sub-zero, that's when you bring out the tarp and put some water in. And it was better this year than last, but there's still some room for improvement. So I got some ideas for next year.
Yeah, I would encourage people to go check out the pictures on Jordan's Twitter because it's pretty cool. As you say, like, not super common in BC to see that. So it was pretty nice to see.
And I have to agree. I equally, you know, looked east at pictures. And I mean, growing up as a kid, for us, it wasn't going on Twitter. It would be like what we saw on TV or saw in the newspaper. You know, winter here in the Lower Mainland for me as a soccer player, it just meant playing on gravel fields that the city of Vancouver said were all weather. So not only did I have to play on gravel in the rain, I was learning how to skate in your backyard rink was just a foreign concept. Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners there?
Just want to thank Jordan for coming on. I think we had a really great discussion and really great therapy session as well in the middle there, talking about 1040 and all the stuff we'll miss about it. So, as you say, eager to see what comes out of it. Hopefully there's some creative outlets for the talented people involved there.
And final words of wisdom from me. Everyone, you know, it's been a week since obviously we saw what took place with TSN 1040. I strongly encourage people not to take it out on Sportsnet 650. At the end of the day, 650 had absolutely nothing to do with the decision that was made outside of the fact that they were competitors in the space. I would argue that even they were probably surprised that they won the quote unquote radio wars the way they did. But at the end of the day, having sports talk radio in Vancouver is important. Whether or not we can support two stations on the dial, that argument's probably still to be made or maybe has been answered, but it's important to have at least one. And, you know, it was good seeing, you know, people like Scotty reference it, you know, talked about it, Dan Ricci, what have you, like Murph on TV. And they were a lot more direct in how they spoke of how their colleagues sort of, you know, across the way were treated. And that's what's, I think, important about this is at the end of the day, these are people that that we need to, you know, think about that are involved. Now, that said, would it be cool if 650 picked up some 1040 people? True, I think it would be. But then I also don't want to see some of the good people at 650 have to leave and turn. It's just a tough spot to be. Anyway, I also want to thank Jordan for joining us. As I said earlier, a longtime friend of the show, will remain so. We'll have to have him back again. And like you, I am a Packers fan, though the difference is that my mother-in-law told me I am. So this is more of a family gig. The other things you need to know at the end of every episode is to join Discord if you haven't done so already. C4 Discord is accessed by going to discord.io/C4Discord or C4 Podcast. Either one of them get you into the front door. You can follow us on Twitter at the C4 Podcast. Remember, if you go to at C4 Podcast, they talk about an entirely different religion. We, however, talk about the Church of Pedersen at the C4 Podcast. And if you want to find us online, c4podcast.com as well as CanucksHockeyBlog.com. So on behalf of Anna, A4603, myself, Chris, at Light Forest, and friend of the show, Jordan Bateman, at Jordan Bateman on Twitter, thank you for tuning in. We're out.